Welcome back to the Preacher Podcast. We are in the Christmas season, and so a new series is beginning called The Gift of God. We'll hear more about that in just a minute. With us, as they have been throughout the Advent season, Pastors Phil Moldenhauer and Caleb Bassett, both from Our Redeemer in Madison, Wisconsin. Thank you, Phil and Caleb, for serving in this way once again for the Christmas season. So our goal for today is to kind of do two in one. We will talk about Christmas Eve a little bit and a text for Christmas Eve, namely the Luke account of Jesus' nativity. And then also we'll do a little bit on Christmas Day. And for that one, we'll be focusing on the Exodus 33 and 34 reading. So we're doing two texts in one episode because we realize that some preachers will preach a full sermon on one or the other of these occasions, either Christmas Eve or Christmas Day. Some may be preaching on both, and so if that's the case, we'll try to give you something for each of those occasions, but also recognizing that you might be doing one more than the other and perhaps doing a lessons and carol service or something like that on one of these days. Without any further delay, let's get into a little bit on the series and Christmas Eve. Caleb, could you just give us a quick reminder of the foundation materials and what the goal for this series is?
Yeah, the name of the series is The Gift of God, and it's going to play on the very universal idea that at Christmas, everyone's opening gifts. And so the imagery, some of the deeper concepts attached to gift giving and gift receiving will all be well within the range of possibility to draw on for preaching. And in this particular series, though, it's not just only about God giving a gift, but trying to zero in a bit more on the idea that God is himself the gift, the self-giving of God in the incarnation and the coming of Christ. So this will be played out in a number of ways, but it's a useful contrast between the idea of something you get as a wage, something you've earned or deserved, and something that is a gift, which we tend to associate with grace or generosity, and something that is undeserved, generally speaking. So that's going to be the main series theme. And then the individual occasions talk about God's giving and one aspect of it. So for Christmas Eve, the Nativity of our Lord, the theme is God gives heaven's best gift in earth's unlikeliest place. And here there's a strong emphasis on the aspect of the manger, which I think follows Luke's emphasis a bit. We'll talk about this, I'm sure, some more, but the manger is mentioned three times there. And this is, of course, not where you would expect someone as great and glorious as God to appear, in a very literal feeding trough. And so this can be something to highlight, maybe draw attention to. It kind of accentuates the surprise nature of many of God's actions to people, that it's not where you'd expect, and yet it's exactly what we need and kind of fits with his character and his plans and purposes, as we'll see. So you get this theme of the unlikeliest place. And not just the unlikeliest place, but then there's a bit of room to shade it towards the most unlikely of recipients, namely sinners like you and like me. So yeah, that's the theme. And then this particular Christmas Eve emphasis, God's gives heaven's best gift in earth's unlikeliest place.
Thank you. Yeah, as you mentioned, we'll be talking about Luke 2 as our sermon text. Before we do that, Phil, could you remind us of the other readings appointed for this occasion?
Yes, the first reading is from Isaiah 9, verses 2 to 7, and it's at least the beginning and the end are very familiar words. The people walking in darkness have seen a great light. That's verse 2. Down at verse 6, for to us a child is born, to us a son is given. The middle verses, though, I think they kind of play on this theme of God's upsetting of human expectations, for they proclaim that the Lord has shattered the yoke that burdens his people. And when we hear that language, we would expect, an outright show of force. But of course, the great surprise hiding in that first reading is that it's not a show of force. It's the birth of a child, a son who is given to us, who is the Wonderful Counselor, Mighty God, Everlasting Father, Prince of Peace. So that's the first reading, Isaiah 9. Then the second reading is from 1 John 4, verses 9 to 14. And here we have repeated three times that God sent his son into the world. So that's obviously a clear tie-in to Christmas. And once again, it upsets our human expectations because we would expect that the path to God would be our great effusions of love for him. But John says, no, real love is that God loved us and sent his son for us. And it's only from that great self-giving of God that we would have any love at all. So that in that way, the second reading, I think, also falls into this neat category of the great upsetting of human expectations by the nativity of Christ. So those are the other two readings that go along with Luke chapter 2.
Thank you. Let's talk about that then as our text. So Caleb, some thoughts for preachers as they approach Luke chapter 2. One of the challenging things, I suppose, is there's just a lot you could talk about. Luther, you know, you could look up Luther's sermons and things on this, and he's got page after page after page of observations and things. But what are some things maybe to highlight or just to give food for thought regarding for preachers as they approach Luke 2 on Christmas Eve?
Yeah, as I was looking at this, I was thinking what a rich day for preaching it is. There's so many avenues a person could go down. But one that struck me in particular is there's something in my mind anyway, that's kind of elevated or accentuated at Christmas. There's a sort of aura to Christmas that is unlike other Sundays of the year. Even Easter, you know, this, no one should hear me as saying Easter is some sort of minor festival, but there's a certain something that you come to, especially that evening service on Christmas Eve, where you just expect this sense of mystery and awe. And I think it can be a good time for the preacher to play into that a bit, or lean into it, I should say. And it reminded me of John Kleinig said in one of his books, I think maybe it was a book called Grace Upon Grace, but he had this great definition of mystery. People often will think of mystery as a secret, but a secret, he points out, is no longer, it ceases to be a secret when it is revealed. And yet a mystery, especially in that deep Christian sense that is often used, remains a mystery even when it is revealed. In fact, sometimes the revelation of it only deepens the appreciation of the mystery. And so examples we have would be the mystery of love or marriage or family, that as you grow, as you delve deeper and deeper into it, it actually rewards your deeper dive, so to speak, with even greater depths of mystery. And this is a Sunday where where it's probably, in my mind, okay to sort of leave people maybe with a, if you're going to shade more towards the emotion or the heart rather than the head, this is maybe the day where you can get away with that a bit by pressing in that idea of mystery. Not that you check your head at the door or anything like that, but there's a lot of rich themes here where that element of mystery could be tapped into.
Right. Yeah, Phil, any reflections on that or response to that or other thoughts for preachers on Luke 2?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I guess I always, in my own mind, I kind of sort out Christmas Eve and Christmas Day as the Nativity on Christmas Eve and the Incarnation on Christmas Day. Mm-hmm. And yeah, that the whole theme of mystery coming through with this great gift for all people born in the manger. You know, I mean, it just, it, yeah, it's a special night to preach. There's no doubt about it. And I do think that you can make some good homiletical hay off of this whole, selection by God of the setting, in which Christ is born. I read unlikeliest and I, you know, instantly I'm set to quibbling, because whenever you use a superlative, you always say, well, Couldn't there have been less likely places than Bethlehem? But we're not talking in absolutes here. We're talking in, again, in this way that God upsets our human expectations. And by sending Christ to this plain old ordinary Bethlehem among the poor and lowly of the world, he certainly emphasizes that there's room at the manger for everybody. And I think that that's the great joy of Christmas preaching is helping people to see that God is not a God who's far off or only available to a certain select special few or something like that, but he's this God who comes and draws near even to the people who would feel like they would have the least chance to have an audience with their Lord. So I think you can emphasize those kinds of themes in real winsome ways, like Caleb said, in ways that warm our hearts, just as Luke has with his really lovely account of the birth.
Yeah. Great. Caleb, go ahead.
Sure. Speaking of that, the unlikely or the people who might not think they've got an audience, it's almost as if with this text and this occasion, there's so much you could say that you could almost benefit from fencing off some things you might not say on this occasion. And one would be, it's, we all understand the pet peeve as a pastor of the Christmas and Easter Christian. And so there could be this temptation to think, all right, this is my time to tell them that we should have been seeing them the last several months, or hey, there is church next Sunday or something like that. But perhaps that this isn't the time for that. Maybe that's the follow-up conversation you have on the phone with them, or you write them a note or something. But there's just so much here that to sort of dampen it, especially because, with the theme of gift, I mean, we're trying to emphasize in this series description anyway, the sense that this is free for all, regardless of merit, and specifically that if you were to earn this gift, it's not a gift anymore. In the same way, if a father is giving gifts to his children around the Christmas tree, and when it's all done, says, "Now let these gifts be a reminder to you to now behave yourself and treat your mother with respect in the next few weeks," because it's been suddenly it was like, wait, what was this for again? And that's what I think is neat on this theme, is that the whole point is of a gift is that they're like living object lessons, in a sense that the point of the gift is that the very act of the giving is what points us to a world in which the threats of the law are lifted. That yes, maybe the kids have misbehaved in the month of December or through the whole year, and yet there are those gifts. They're still there under the tree. In the same way, the very act of this giving and this preaching could be like it's like God's gift to the people that day. It enacts the very sense of that freedom. Right. And so it's worth not putting a damper on that or chilling it with something.
Great. Phil?
Yeah. And I think just reflecting back, I think when in my first years, I think I sometimes on Christmas Eve was tempted to try to go after the people I knew were there only out of obligation to family members or things like that, So you try to address the skeptics and stuff like that. And I guess upon further reflection, maybe that's not the most helpful approach. Maybe the most helpful approach for the skeptics or whatever, the people who maybe think it's a nice story but not true, is the real approach is just to preach it, to preach the text and let it mm-hmm. do the work. So yeah, I appreciate that. Rather than running after certain people to try to gun down or something like that. Yeah, just bringing forth the great, beautiful gospel here is the best thing we can do.
Yeah. Yeah, in preaching, we talk about appropriation, truths to believe, application, things to do. I see this as kind of geared toward appropriation, on these big festivals like Christmas, the to you aspect of the gift that is given. of course, I think it's legitimate to, you know, build applications off of this. The shepherds returning, glorifying and praising God and things like that. That's our response too. But yeah, I agree with what you both have said. Let the gospel shine through here for people to hang on to take home, to treasure. All those themes are here so richly. As far as law and gospel, I think the foundation resources direct us to, well, even with the theme, the unlikeliest place, and reference to the unworthiness of the shepherds, who are some of the first recipients of the gospel that Christ is born. Is that kind of what you think of when you think of law gospel thoughts, the lowliness, the unworthiness of Bethlehem, of the shepherds, but God giving that gift regardless? I think you both referred to that in some ways. Phil?
Yeah, I mean, I think we both said in our various ways, like, this is not a time, I think, for moral rebuke, you know, save that for another time. So if there's a law element here, it is the hopelessness and despair of living in a broken world apart from the self-giving of God. You know, mm-hmm. I mean, that is it. And that with this gift of a child born in a manger, we have this never-ending hope and this real reason for joy in every aspect. I mean, it is good news that is breaking into this world, and breaking into this world in such a surprising and winsome and warm and mysterious way.
Great, great. Caleb?
Yeah, I'm kind of mulling that over, how you asked that, you know, the unworthiness of the shepherds, for instance. You know, we're not told a lot about the shepherds from which we could conclude that they are, you know, quote unquote, unworthy. So it's almost like, in especially the way the foundation series is written, that what we're supposed to kind of lead to is that just as a great head of state would not appear in a lowly fashion, you know, God in his glory, why would you expect him to you know, humble himself to be announced first to shepherds, you know, sort of blue collar workers in the fields, kind of mm-hmm. theme there. And yet on the flip side, it's hard not to think that in terms of Christ's saving work and the concept of his availability, to use that phrase, to everyone, who better than shepherds to first hear the news? It would be almost out of character if from the whole story here, if Christ was first announced to the kings and the mighty. So mm-hmm. I think it's going to be, I agree with Phil, of course, like moral rebuke. It's probably, there's not, it's hard to find something here where you'd really make that a key part of your sermon, but it's sort of the general fallenness of mankind, that what would the shepherds, what would anyone's daily life be like ultimately without the hope of God in it? Whether you're tending flocks by night, nursing children by night, getting out up early in the morning to head to the construction site, or those kinds of things. There's just some real beauty in that, that the unworthiness, if there is any, it's that what we think of as unworthy, our daily vocations and just who we are by default, that God honors and magnifies with this announcement of his birth.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Cool.
Yeah, and I mean, I just love the very ordinariness of everything that's going on. I mean, everything Luke says, everybody's basically just going about their normal business. And I mean, you just have to believe that only the Lord, who is truly Lord over all of history, would dare to send his son in such a boring way. You know, like, I mean, Caesar is just doing what Caesar does. Quirinius, same thing, you know, and he lists the high and mighty, then he sets them aside. But I mean, Joseph and Mary are only just doing what they had to do as obedient citizens. And the shepherds are just living out their shepherd's lives. You know, I mean, it's so mm-hmm. like incredibly unremarkable that this is the way God chooses to come and bring his son into the world. I think that's really neat.
Is Caleb?
So then I think that leads to some kind of exciting gospel themes, that that the work of God is able to, and seems God enjoys for it to break out into or be revealed in the ordinary and the everyday, which in the Advent series, we played a lot on the themes of weariness and anxiety. And it's a time of year when everyone senses they're at the end of a busy time. This was what we were all preparing for. And so now what, you know, what big, great thing is going to happen, you know, to our eyes, a little baby is wrapped up and laid in a manger. This is all it appears to be. And yet through this, God is doing something remarkable. And that's a theme that you can take as a trajectory out for the people. Everything on the other side of the incarnation is different from the great to the least, but especially to the least. You know, Bill mentioned the great figures, Caesar and et cetera. You know, they're in the text kind of to mark, just so everyone knows when this happened. Like that's kind of, they're like the timekeepers in a sense. Mm-hmm. Like mm-hmm. everyone knows when they were. So now we're going to set them aside now that we've established the time frame. Now let's get to the real heart of the matter. What happened at that time?
Right. Yeah. Any ideas for preachers to kind of unify a message here, or things that you have done with the Luke 2 gospel theme wise, or kind of an area of focus? Again, there's a lot to cover here, a lot to preach on. Suggestions for preachers for kind of narrowing down or limiting their focus a little bit?
Yep. Yeah. You had said this already. There's this, the to you or the for you aspect of proclamation here. And I think that narrows, in my mind, that narrows it down. That, all of this happens and it happens for you, whoever you are. A savior has been born to you. This is a sign that's for all people and to bring us all joy.
Great. Yeah. Focusing on the for you of the gift. Caleb?
One suggestion is with a text like this, with so many rich images associated with it that are, you know, beloved and cherished. I picture, you know, a nativity scene. There's a lot to see on the table there, including the, you know, the Magi are, you know, set appropriately at a distance in some homes to indicate that, you know, they're on the way and they're not actually there yet, et cetera, et cetera. But there's so much, you know, imagery there. So maybe the suggestion I'd make is, you're going to play on some imagery to get that, you know, set the scene or build that sense of mystery, that, you know, maybe pick one aspect of it to zero in on rather than try to, play all the hits and, you know, hit everything that's there. That'd be one way to narrow the focus down a bit.
Okay. Yeah.
Pick one key thing and then highlight how that is accentuating some aspect of this great gift to you.
Great. Yeah, I think that's wise. So picture the whole scene and then kind of narrow the focus onto one or two aspects of that, right? With the for you kind of predominating that gospel thought. Well, if it's all right, then I'd like to move on to Christmas Day, give the brothers who are preaching on Christmas Day a little bit to think about. So Caleb, could we go back to you for just a little reminder of the Christmas Day theme in this Gift of God series?
Yeah, so we got the gift of God. We just covered the heaven's best gift and earth's unlikeliest place. But here we get to God gives himself as one of us. And here the emphasis gets us onto the nature of the gift. What is it? You know, we've received this gift. It's for you. It's for salvation. We've torn open the paper, we've looked inside, we've marveled at it, we're amazed at it. And then we have to ask, all right, so what is this? What is this for? What is it going to do? And so the Foundation series is prompting us to help hearers connect the dots between what they've received and the purpose for which it was given, specifically to deliver us from our most pressing enemies, sin, death, and the devil. And so, so it's kind of getting down into the fact that, you know, kind of what is the incarnation for?
Mm-hmm. Great. Phil, could you remind us of the gospel of the day and the second reading? Then we'll get back to the first reading as the sermon text.
Yes. Yeah. The gospel appointed for Christmas Day is the prologue to John's gospel, or I guess specifically John 1 verses 1 through 18, which is, of course, just a marvelously rich text. The whole of John's gospel is prefigured, pre-shadowed in these verses. Mm-hmm. It all comes to a head at verse 14, where John says, "The Word became flesh and made his dwelling among us." He's already identified that this Word is the God who is in the beginning and through whom all things were made, so on and so forth. So that's really rich gospel reading for Christmas Day. The second reading is very brief. It's from Romans 8, just 31 and 32, which is in the middle of the section where Paul's kind of losing his mind at how great the gospel is. And he's asking these huge questions. If God is for us, who can be against us? And if God gave his son for us, then how could he not also graciously give us all things? Which is this just, you know, incredible, marvelous thought. He's going to give us all things. So what do we think we're missing out on or anything like that? So the second reading, again, very brief, but just really hits that the gracious, overwhelming, over the top giving of God that we see at Christmas. So those are the other readings that accompany the Exodus account as the first reading.
Great. Let's go to that next. And this may be a reading that is new to many preachers on Christmas Day, but I think, as we'll see, very fitting. Caleb, some thoughts on Exodus 33 and then the few familiar verses from chapter 34 on this festival of the incarnation.
Yeah, so we have Moses here asking the Lord to show him his glory. Moses thirsting to know more about this great God and Lord he's been interacting with. And so here we have the Lord responding, you know, I'm gonna do something for your request. I'm gonna cause all my goodness to pass in front of you, and I'm going to proclaim my name, the Lord, in your presence. And so right here, preachers will sort of sense we've got this whole avenue open to us of the name of the Lord. And God declaring that he will have mercy on whom he will have mercy, compassion on whom he will have compassion. But the key thing that's interesting, and I kind of think it'd be almost impossible to preach this Exodus text on Christmas Day without being in very close conversation with John 1 throughout the sermon. So the Lord says, "You cannot see my face, for no one may see me and live." And this is what kind of opens up this question at Christmas. So we've, throughout the Old Testament, everything about God is this, there's a danger to him. That, you know, touch the mountain on which he's resting and everything, you know, you will die. You know, reach out and try to, you know, touch something you weren't supposed to touch, down you go. I mean, this is not a comfortable, in a sense, not a comfortable God to be around. And we understand theologically why this is. Who can withstand the glory of the Lord? And he tells Moses this directly, like, you're going to be consumed if I were to show you my glory. So that's where we get into conversation with John, I think, is that the whole idea is this is how you see God. You're going to see God in Jesus. And I'm sure we'll discuss this in our conversation here. I'm just trying to give the quick introduction or set the stage. Yeah. So yeah, anyway, you get the Lord passing by, puts Moses in a cleft of the rock, covers him, but then he gets to see, you know, him from his back, you know, from the, but not his face. There's the cloud. He proclaims the name of the Lord, the compassionate and gracious God, slow to anger, abounding in love and faithfulness, etc., etc. And this is God's identity that Moses can only see in part. And yet we, according to John, are the ones who see him in the flesh and even see his face. So yeah, that's Exodus 33 and then a bit of from 34. Familiar, but very interesting in terms of how it interacts with the gospel for Christmas Day.
Yeah, definitely. Bill, some reflections on Exodus 33 and 34 here on Christmas Day?
Yeah, I mean, Caleb covered it very nicely that there's this great full revelation, just like John says in the beginning of his gospel, that Christ comes as the light that gives light to all men, that in Jesus we have grace and truth. You know, the law is given through Moses, but grace and truth come through Jesus Christ. And yet, nevertheless, it still seems to me that the birth of Christ, in a certain sense, is seeing the back parts of God. I mean, right? Like, we're not God, he hides himself, and Christ, by his state of humiliation, hides the full force of the naked deity. Just for the one moment on the Mount of Transfiguration, when that glory blazes up, it's still enough to cause Peter and James and John to hit the ground in terror. So I guess in one sense, even though I agree, and I think in Christ we see this, we see more of the Lord who is compassionate and gracious, whose you know, mercy and compassion extends to 1,000 generations, so on and so forth. Yet in another sense, because we have God hiding himself in our human flesh, we're still, he accommodates himself to us in the same way that he accommodated Moses by putting him in the cleft in the rock. So those are the kind of things I guess I was thinking about in this text, especially as it relates to John 1.
Yeah. Yeah, I was thinking many of the same things. And when we think in terms of law and gospel here, I think it comes across clearly. No one can see my face and live. This great gulf that exists between God and his creatures, that to even be exposed to the full weight of his glory is not something human beings can survive. So God hides himself in order to reveal himself. And of course, the parallel is right there in the incarnation of Jesus too. Is that kind of what you guys are thinking when you think about law and gospel? Again, it's a Sunday to just get the gospel out there, proclaim it. Similar thoughts, Caleb? Or Phil?
Go ahead with Phil first, then I can follow up in a bit. Yeah.
Great. Sure. Yeah. I guess just thinking here, yeah, that we don't have a spiritual God. We have a God who is in the wriggly flesh of a baby. You know, that this is not, it, like, we never come just to proclaim nice-sounding spiritual platitudes. We come to proclaim a person. We come to proclaim Christ, you know, and that seems to me maybe to cover the law element, that here's a God, yeah, we can't see him. So what he does is he accommodates himself to us. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Again, I don't see this as like a time for moral rebuke or strong moral rebuke, apart from just saying, this is our plight as humans. We are, you know, we've all rebelled against the Lord and we've been estranged from him, and he has come to make things right.
Great. Caleb, following up on that.
Yeah, my mind often goes to sometimes impressions in the broader culture, society about God. And I think it's interesting. And we couldn't say that, you know, we're not going to draw a direct line between Moses' question and the modern or contemporary sense of wanting some kind of contact with God, you know, what we might think of as spirituality today. But what's kind of neat about this is that what many folks think they need about in terms of proof for God's existence or a description of God or something that's going to move the needle for them in, you know, in grasping deity or Christian theology, whatever it might be, they think they need more description. Okay, tell me this, I've got this tough question, explain that. And it all, which is all fine and good and some of the work of theology, but it reminds me of a distinction between a descriptive definition, which is one where you try to explain every aspect of something in all of its detail, which is very useful. But the problem with it is that you can always ask another question and dig in deeper. If you try to explain anything, you can always go to a new, deeper level when you're in that mode. And kids know this right off the bat. It's why kids ask you that, well, why is this? Why is that? And they just keep going and going layer after layer. But then there's a denotative definition is where you actually just point to something and say, there it is. And now you can know it. You can see it. And in many ways, that is a better way to, you know, trying to explain a sensation or experience to someone is different than saying, here, just no, try it. And here, what's interesting is when it comes to persons, that the descriptive way of describing someone is actually the less fulfilling way to know a person. The denotative, to just point and say, here he is, look at him, talk to him, see him, hear him. That is a complete way of knowing a person. Even though intellectually or cognitively, you're not grasping every possible material fact or data about the person. So what's cool then is that when it comes to God, yes, his glory transcends us. It exceeds us. It would consume us. And yet it's not, and he's hidden. And yet it's not as if when we see Christ, we're not, that we're missing something, that we're getting the person we need, and we can know him as fully as we need to know him and as satisfying as we need to know him. And yes, there might be more questions. Well, how does the incarnation work? Sure. But when it comes to knowing God and knowing who is a person, has personality, this is the best. This is what we've got, and it's how we interact. And it's one of God's gifts to us, is to precisely to come to us in a way that is so satisfying. So I think that's a neat thing to maybe highlight this time of year anyway.
Right. Yeah, thanks for those thoughts. As we were talking before, I reached for a book on my shelf, Harold Sankbile's Dying to Live. I've got the first edition here. I think it's been revised since then, but he has a neat section on this, connecting the incarnation with this account from Exodus 33. So he's talking about this. In my edition, it's pages 34 and 35, if any pastors have this and want to look it up. Let me just read a couple sentences here. Moses was like us. He believed that what you see is what you get. Yet Moses never saw God. Moses heard from God, but he never saw God with his eyes. And Moses, like us, got tired of living by faith. He wanted to live by sight. Now show me your glory, he called out in frustration. And then he cites our verses from chapter 33. And the author goes on, what God did for Moses centuries before, he was doing for all mankind at Bethlehem. There, all the fullness of God was hiding under the humanity of the infant Jesus. He, the hope of all the world, was laid in a cattle trough, God in diapers. So it's like his way of putting that, and great way to connect those two accounts. I think that's the idea before us today with this Exodus reading and on the festival of the incarnation here. And then, of course, chapter 34, this is also God's revelation, where God essentially says, I'm not going to show you my full glory, but I will speak to you and give you the message of my grace. And that's still how he comes to us, right? Through his humble yet powerful words. And his words are sufficient. Yeah, as you both said, it's not as though we're missing something as we look at Jesus. This is the true God. And it's not as though we're missing anything if we hear about the true God and the proclamation of his incarnation and the gospel that flows from that. Further thoughts for preachers, appropriation, application, those categories, or any illustrations you use, or something further, Phil?
Well, just to finish connecting the dots that you're drawing there, that it's not that a baby was born long ago and we don't really have any meaningful contact with this, right, this Christ, because it's been 2,000 years, but that his presence is still among us wherever his word is preached, where, you know, Jesus says, when two or three gather in my name, there I am with them. And on Christmas Day in particular, to think that Christ came in a body with human blood so that he could give that body and blood to us in the Lord's Supper, isn't that not still an invitation where God says, here, you know, come and taste and see how close I am, that I share your humanity with you, and that I give myself for you, so that you can taste and see that I am the compassionate and gracious God whose mercy knows no bounds. I just think that reminding people that this is, it's not just like every year we're moving further and further away from history and therefore getting more and more removed from Christ, but the incarnation is this ongoing reality in our world that marks all of our lives.
Right. For sure. Yeah, thank you for bringing up the sacrament too, and those places that offer the sacrament on Christmas Day. I found that to be just so rich as you receive Jesus. Yeah, it through these humble means, but this is the same Jesus who was born in Bethlehem, coming with all his gifts in his humble way. And then, of course, there's connections there with Exodus 33 and 34 as well. Any thoughts about kind of narrowing things down or ideas to present, or how would you kind of crystallize some of the thoughts we've been talking about, whether it's a theme idea or something of that nature? Any suggestions for preachers there, how to kind of start putting things in a more focused way?
I mean, if you're going to work with the angle of the face, you know, to see the face of God is, you know, to tiptoe up to the manger to see the face of God, I think could work very nicely here as a way to tie in what we've talked about together with John 1.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. Yeah. And there's the idea of, seeing God's glory is not his unveiled glory, but glory in the face of Christ. Caleb, I'm sorry, I interrupted you.
Yeah, well, yeah, I think that's a great theme or concept to lean into on this day, especially when you think of John's gospel. And whenever you read John, I just get this sense he's just trying to say to everyone he knows is going to read his words. He wants us to sense the marvel at talking to a person, looking that person in the eyes, and knowing that they're looking at God and talking to God. And, you know, he said, you know, this is our testimony. I'm telling the truth. We have seen this, we've touched it. The exuberance he's got flowing from the marvel of, yeah, that you could go up and we all love looking at a newborn baby, but to look at one and to know that this is the creator of the universe and our savior and the one in whom all of our hopes are tied. There's a lot there to direct people to, that this is what God has always been proclaiming from Moses to now. And yeah, I love the idea Phil mentioned before. On it continues that this is not about God's love. The incarnation is how God is showing us love, and right to this day.
Right. Great. Any further thoughts? Well, if not, let's turn things over to preachers then. The Lord bless you in this busy season with the privilege of proclaiming God's gift to us, his only Son in the flesh, our Savior. The Lord bless you, preachers.